Hi, everybody. It's Jean Norton. Thank you so much for coming out this weekend and on a Saturday. I don't know where everybody is from, but in Austin, Texas, we're actually getting a little bit of breather from the relentless heat we've been experiencing. And what a nice change. Of course, I think I live in about the best city in the world, but I think one of my guests, Bill Mancaro, it probably has me beat because he is living in Kerrville, small town west of Austin, and in one of the most beautiful places, near one of the most beautiful places I've ever visited in small towns west in that area, some really beautiful scenery, not well-known oasis. So I've got two guests this time, and people are still coming on the call. So I will just cover some of the housekeeping items. First, I've got Bill Mancaro. He runs the Paper Source, and he has been talking about and teaching about and investing in notes for many years. I've looked at his bio, and it goes on and on and on with just incredible, Bill, you certainly rubbed elbows with some pretty famous people. I'm impressed. And
that means I'm old, Jean. That's what it amounts to.
I'm sorry. Please say that again.
That just means I'm old. That's really what it amounts to.
Well, actually, I was thinking, man, if I tell him that he did all this, they're going to think he's an old guy. But you're not that old. I can tell you're doing really, really well here. Staying up to date with all of these internet entrepreneurs. And so you and your wife started the Paper Source Journal a long time ago, and I know I've been a subscriber for a long time, and finally got on one of his calls, and he was talking about a seminar he's got coming up, and he said it's the first time he's done one like this, and it has to do with non-performing notes. And I've got to let you know I've been fascinated with the whole note business since I first learned anything about real estate investing. I know it's a advanced strategy, and like a lot of things, you don't want to go into it lightly. But if you really want to learn how to do something, you just got to do it. Then the other guest that I have today is scrolling down, Gordon Moss, and he is an expert on non-performing second lien, second position notes, and that is probably a whole discussion on itself. I'm fascinating. It's fascinating that people would invest in second notes. But Gordon, welcome. I really appreciate you coming on the call. I'm just really, really excited about this.
Yeah, I did.
Gordon,
thank you.
Hello. Oh, you're welcome. Yes, I can hear you. Thank you. So I want to go ahead and just give you some big reminders. I have got two field trips set up, and for those of you who don't know me, I have been rehabbing properties remotely. Actually, the way I prefer to say it is I don't let state lines restrict my ability to make profits. I will go anywhere where there's a good profit spread and rehab properties and sell them for a profit. And there are many tools that I use to determine where I want to go and how I develop my power team and how I manage the projects. I have heard a lot of people frustrated that they are not able to get the deals they want, or they haven't been able to get a deal, or they haven't been able to make real estate investing a success for them. And I have been able to, and I know it's hard. I mean, it's hard, especially when you just do a three-day training or several trainings. And I was able to wrap my arms around it, step back, think about it a little bit, and had some success when other people didn't. So I started holding field trips, and that was over 2 years ago. So I just want to let everybody know that I do have two field trips coming up. I'm really excited about one of them is in Seattle. That's coming up September 6th through 8th. And you can find out more information about that at jeannorton.com/Seattle. And then I have another one coming up in Miami. Actually, we'll be staying in Miami Beach. And I'm really excited about that. This will be my second visit to Miami. And that one is jeannorton.com/Miami. I got just a couple of things, just short things to say about the two locations and why they're important. Seattle is a high-demand area. They are at a higher price point. They are a little bit more upper-end houses, and there's an extremely low unemployment rate. So for real estate investors, that really has an interest. There's another thing about Seattle that I'm going to talk about specifically in Seattle, and that is a little bit that came out of my Making Dollars from Dirt event that I held in Austin in June. And that's for those hypermarket areas where there's just not enough inventory. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about creating inventory and some of the challenges in Seattle. That will not be the case in Miami. In Miami, we're going to be talking about the House Bill 87 and the effects that is happening in the entire state of Florida. And if it wasn't for House Bill 87, I wouldn't be doing a field trip in Florida. So there you go. I'm going to see a lot of opportunities coming up this next year. So please, if you just go to gnorton.com, you'll see there's the two opportunities there. So now the other thing that I'm just really, really excited about is the non-performing note conference that's coming up, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And that, just for your information, that link is budurl. It's budurl.com/noteconference. Just like you would spell it all one word, note conference. And I was fortunate enough to get the attention of Bill Mancaro, who, like I said, is an expert in notes. And I know a little bit about notes because my weekly mastermind meeting that I attend here in Austin, we have a note broker, and he's been featured on this call before. And if you want to go look for it, it's, you know, all of the recordings, almost all of the recordings are posted at rehabbingremotely.com. So this one will be posted at rehabbingremotely.com as well. So talking about notes, note brokering, and even in my own issue, we had sold a property that my husband inherited, and it was owned free and clear, so we knew how to structure the note so that we could get the best possible price for selling it. So I just know that that's a whole other world, and I just love the idea of playing in there. And I know that I put in my invitation for this call, imagine, and I'm just going to say imagine, and you guys, Bill and Gordon, you can shoot me down if you want, but imagine a house that costs $100,000, a promissory note that's $100,000, that's non-performing, that you can buy for $20,000, reach out to the homeowner, and tell them to sell the house, and that you'll approve a short sale, and they sell the house that's worth $60,000, they sell it for $60,000, you approve it, and voila, you've profited $40,000. Does that ever happen? Bill or Gordon?
Gordon, you want to handle that one?
Sure. Once again, this is Gordon Moss. I'm here in San Diego, California. $100,000 note absolutely could be purchased for $20,000. As Bill mentioned earlier and Gene mentioned, I focus on the junior liens a second. We purchase junior liens for even bigger discounts than that, but that would be a second position loan. But I won't get too complicated there. Let's call it a first position loan. Let's say that you bought a $100,000 note on a $60,000 house, whatever it is, for $20,000. Does that happen? Yes. Now, it would be in certain areas, and once again, I won't get into it completely right now, but, for example, an area like Detroit or Cleveland, Ohio, you'll find properties for less than that. You can buy a $30,000 note on a house for $500. I don't know if you'd want that house, frankly, because the people around it might not be too it'd be very exciting, frankly, but I don't think you'd really want to deal with them. But can the notes be bought at an extreme discount like that? Absolutely. Let's talk about California for a second. You probably couldn't do that in California. In California, if you were going to buy a $100,000 note, you're looking at about 70 or 80 cents on the dollar. So that thing would cost you $70,000 or $80,000. So I guess, Gene, to your point, it kind of depends on the market. But can that happen? Absolutely. Does it always happen? No. But if you bought maybe, 10 notes like that, two or three of them, could be a home run, as I think pretty much what way I described what you just said. That does happen, yes.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this question, especially about California. I know the California market is soaring, although it is slowing down just a little bit, I understand, probably profit-taking and back to school. But if you, I mean, I'm talking non-performing notes. People would pay 70% for a non-performing note.
That's what I say, Gene. I say you got to be. I don't buy them here, frankly. At least the first, and I'm going to go into that completely at the Vegas event that we're going to have. But I buy the junior lien because you can buy that junior lien for 5, 10, 15 cents on the dollar on a $100,000 note on a nice house in California. Yep, you can buy that. On the first notes, see, this is kind of a delineation here, and I don't want to get all complicated, but there's the first lien strategy, as I call it, and the second lien. And they're both admirable, and they both work, but they're different, and they're for different things, which I'm going to make clear once again at Bill's event in Las Vegas coming up. But, I don't know why somebody would pay 80 cents on the dollar for a California note when it might take you years, because you really can't foreclose in California right now. They just passed a law in January called the California Homeowners Bill of Rights, which effectively you can't foreclose. So
really?
It takes years. It's almost like a mortgage state in the Northeast now that's so tough to foreclose in. So you might get stuck with that note for years. They might file bankruptcy. You might be holding that thing for a long time. So people do it. I'm not one of them. But there are definitely opportunities in the first market and the second market.
Wow. Well, I think that, that sounds like they're investing on futures. I mean, it could be that if they paid $70,000 for a $100,000 loan, then they must be expecting the house to be worth $200,000 pretty soon. And then
That's a good point. Yeah.
And, Gene, I'm always asked, the first question I'm always asked about this is, why would somebody buy a note that somebody isn't paying, that the person isn't paying on? It sounds like total junk. But that's always the question that people ask when they're new to this. And you have to realize that you look at the value of the property and get the note at enough of a discount, and then you're not just buying these notes to get the property. Some people do that, but there's a lot of other reasons to buy a non-performing note. But even if you do have to foreclose, you buy it at enough of a discount to the value of the property, that obviously it can be a very good deal. But often, and a lot of the people that buy non-performing notes go to the borrower and say, what's the situation here? Because a lot of people, they're not all deadbeats. They've lost their job. In the economy, it's turned down on them. They live in a part of the country where the economy is not very good, and they haven't been able to make their payments. Maybe they tried to make a partial payment to the bank, and the banks don't accept partial payments. They want to keep their house, but they just can't afford the payment. But if you buy their loan at such a tremendous discount that you can say, okay, if you can't make a $2,000 a month monthly payment, can you make a $1,500 a month monthly payment or a $1,000 a month monthly payment? And you work with them to modify the note. That's another strategy that a lot of people use, and they get the very good yields when you buy at such discounts.
Yeah, I think that the opportunities are tremendous. I mean, and you just need to know where you're buying, what are the foreclosure laws, and what if. The other thing I was thinking of is just, you buy a note and actually just pay somebody to move out, do the cash for keys thing, and have them even, I don't know, would you do a deed in lieu or a quitclaim deed or something like that? Just,
you can get a deed in lieu or you do the cash for keys deal, especially on a vacant property. I've heard from a lot of people that they like vacant properties, and they'll just contact they'll buy the note and then contact the owner, and they'll say, yeah, I don't want that property. I don't want to pay the taxes, the insurance, the upkeep, and all that. Here are the keys.
And they might have bought it at enough of a discount that you'd be more than delighted to pay the taxes and get the keys, clean it up a little bit, and then sell it to some FHA buyer or something and make some money in the meantime.
Yeah. Another strategy is to season it. get it re-performing, hold on to it, let it season, let them make their payments for a year or so, and then sell that note and make a nice profit. So there's a whole bunch of ways you can do it that don't all involve foreclosure.
That's right. That makes complete sense. You might have bought it for 20, worked out a modification, had them sit on it and pay for 12 months, and then you could sell it at, you know, at 50, because it's a performing note at that point, and there's more demand for good cash, good solid cash flow.
Absolutely. There are a whole bunch of investors in our, we published for 20-some years, we've published, or 15, I guess, 20, something like that, a registry of note investors that are professional, they're not private investors, they're national or regional companies, and they're looking for, primarily they're looking for performing notes. So you just go to our registry and shop around a little bit and get the best price on the note. There are buyers out there, that's for sure.
And you have that, and that's part of your is that part of your membership or?
Yeah, we have a monthly, as you know, as you mentioned, we have a monthly newsletter called the Paper Source Journal, and that's $79 a year, and it comes out, as I say, once a month. It's about 15, 20 pages every month on what's going on in the note industry and new ideas on how to negotiate, and I'm only got an issue right here. I shouldn't rely on my memory. Interviews with people in the business. We interviewed all of the major note investors and asked them, what's your best advice that you would have to note brokers? And we published that last month. Here's an article called When the Seller Says, Why Should I Accept a Discounted Price for My Note? Here's how to handle that question. An article called, you know, Three Ways to Produce More Profits Per Transaction. Then we've got news from around the country about what's going on with court decisions, new laws, just things going on in the note and somewhat real estate, but mostly, the real estate secured note business. So that's what we have at papersourceonline.com if people are interested in the newsletter.
Wow, now if they go to the conference, do they get the newsletter as part of the deal or is it just totally a separate deal?
If they sign up through the website address that you give them, Gene, or if they call us and mention your name, they will get a free subscription to the Paper Source and the registry of note investors. What's that website again that you have for them?
It's budurl.com. That's like one of those URL shorteners, budurl.com/noteconference, NoteConference.
Note or notes?
Note.
Just note.
Just note conference. Yeah. And if you have a problem finding it, I can email it to you. Just let me know. And I can post the link. I'll post the link when I post this recording also at Rehabbing Remotely so that they know. I think that's just, $79 for the year. If you're serious about investing in notes and understanding the different things that you can do with notes, I mean, that just seems like a minimal, just that newsletter would be a minimal expense. And the registry, I right now don't have a whole lot of cash to play with, but I certainly wouldn't mind trying to. So I'm one of these people that I learn by doing, and yes, sometimes I make some mistakes, but that's why I share to those that haven't been able to do it or haven't gotten past their obstacles, because I can say, hey, look at me, I did it, like a tax deed. I bought a tax deed on a condo in Daytona Beach, and that was a lot of fun. But I'm really anxious to get started in the note investing myself. So that's budurl.com/noteconference. I want to ask Gordon a couple of questions because, well, first let me back up a little bit. I've got Robert Young is a note broker here in Austin, and he's part of my weekly group, and he's a note broker, Texas Note Company. Like I said, I've interviewed him. And when I first talked to him about this strategy of, buying a non-performing note, and he just kind of looked at me funny. And so I don't know if it was just a well-discussed topic amongst his customers, but I think his customers are mainly people that just want good cash flow, and they want to buy it at a discount, and they want to earn 20% on their money, which, from what I understand, you discount the note so that you can get the interest that you want to get. And so seeing more and more of these non-performing notes coming up, and then you holding this conference on non-performing notes is, I think, very timely. And I'm really happy that you're doing this. Now, I do know a little bit about the junior lien position, the second position, and I do know about the Garn St. Germain legal stuff, not a lot about it. But, you know, Gordon, some people would say you got to be nuts to be investing in a second or junior lien when that's the first one extinguished in a foreclosure. But yet, on the other side, if you buy a junior lien at an even better discount and a lesser price, it sounds to me like you're able to somehow leverage that for significant investments. Tell me a little bit about that.
Let me tell you a quick story, Jean. I was in the same mindset that you were. I've been in the real estate business for over 25 years doing investing, doing different things as a broker, et cetera. And I heard this concept of the non-performing notes. I was thinking, okay, the banks created this fiasco with all these bad loans they made in 05, 06, 07, whatever. And I said, how does the little guy like myself get to play? How do we get to do this? So I studied it. I actually went out and bought a non-performing first lien. And I like it. It's a good little deal in Texas. It still pays. It's got a good return, better than what you just mentioned. But it was a nice little deal. So I started going around the country to all these different distressed debt meetings, mortgage banker meetings, loan servicer meetings to kind of get a feel and find out who the players were, who the good guys, who the bad guys, et cetera. And I remember one night I was there at a distressed debt conference, and these guys said, hey, you know, we'll take you out drinking tonight. And I said, okay. And so they took me out, and they said, what do you do? And I said, well, I bought a non-performing first lien. And they said, oh, we would never do that. And I said, what would you do? And they said, we buy non-performing junior liens. And I said, I thought I was crazy, and all my friends think I'm still crazy buying a non-performing first. You guys are out of your mind buying a non-performing second. So they said, okay. Right. They said, let's talk about this. So through the night, we had a lot of beer, and in the morning, I woke up with a hangover and a new concept, though, a new idea about junior liens. They talked me into it because here's effectively what they said. They said, you know, you can place one big bet on a non-performing first lien. I mean, you're going to pay a higher price, and it's going to be on a bigger property, whatever. They said, or you could pay little bits, little amounts for junior liens. And say if you bought 10 of those for the same $100,000 you're going to pay for one big non-performing first, if you could buy 10 little ones, knowing that like a hand of blackjack, you're going to lose two or three of your hands, but three or four of those hands are going to just do really well and cover your whole investment. So I said, it kind of made sense to me. But then I had issues like what you were talking about. I said, well, what if, what's my big exposure here? Well, the first could foreclose and you get wiped out, and that's not good. And a junior lien, a second by even the way it sounds like an inferior, a weaker position. But once you learn the game, it really wasn't. I learned that I could control the whole deal from second position, that the first couldn't foreclose on me. And then once again, if it did once in a while, it wasn't that big of a deal because I only paid this much. So without going into an hour-long speech about the whole thing, that's how kind of I evolved down the road of this junior liens, and it's all I do now. And so at this conference, we've got Jack Krupe from Gemini Capital there in New York, who's a great guy who focuses on first and seconds too, and he used to work in the seconds and the first, the whole deal. But they're great. They're both amazing strategies right now at an amazing time, a unique time. I love this business. You can kind of sense it in my voice. And then you've got Bill Mancaro there, who's an icon in the industry and a good guy, which is hard to find sometimes in these different industries, putting on this event. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity to speak at it September 27th and 28th. And I'll go through the whole thing, my story and everything about how I got down the road, the junior lien, the whole thing. But it's an exciting business right now.
I can't wait to learn about it. So tell me, I mean, just give me a little bit, a story of, you know, how, like an example of how you've profited from a junior lien.
Okay. I'm here in California, as I said, and north of me up in that Los Angeles area, there's a there's a nice little house. I call it a Leave It to Beaver house. And for the younger people, that's a kind of a 1950 nice house, you know, three-bedroom, two-bath, tree-lined street, nice, nice area. The house is worth about $400,000, and there was a first on it for $300,000 and a second for $100,000. So let's look at that. You got a $400,000 house, a nice little house, owner-occupied, with the people in the house. I call that emotional equity, and I'll get into that later. But a $400,000 house with a $300,000 performing first lien, they're paying on their first, and a $100,000 non-performing second lien, okay? I bought that second lien, the non-performing second lien, for about $12,000, okay? I called the people and said, hey, you know, our company has taken over this note. We need to work something out. We're not bad guys. We're good guys. What were you paying before on this lien, on this second loan that you had? Oh, we were paying this much. Well, if we could charge you half of that amount, would that work for you? Yes, it would. Deal. So they started paying us $700 a month. They actually upped it to another $300 to $1,000 a month. So effectively, after 1 year of $1,000 a month, I've got my investment back. My $12,000 investment in that second lien is back. And now I've got 29 more years of $1,000 a month, unless they refi it or sell the house, at which time I would make a full $100,000 profit on the deal, 90, whatever it is, net of the money that I put out for it. But that, you know, that's a good one. That's a simple one. And that's really our strategy. We don't foreclose that many times. 5% of the time, or less now, is our foreclosure. We're actually looking to build up our IRA and our Roth IRA with these reperforming notes that we buy at an extreme discount and get the people to work with us. So here's an example, a real example of a note that, once again, I'll go into more detail about at the Las Vegas conference.
Wow, that sounds great. I mean, you get your money back in a year, and the rest is just a free, steady income. And if they end up selling their house, you get $100,000. Okay, that sounds good. I see we've got a question waiting. I want to remind everybody that *6 will get you in the Q&A queue. So let's go with the first one. Gloria, I know that you deal a lot. Gloria's the first question. I know you deal a lot with non-performing notes and everything. And what question do you have for us?
Well, actually, it's just an observation, an additional strategy variation on seconds that ties in with what Man and Carol is talking about, is that in the alternative regarding looking for seconds, you might also look for performing seconds that are of a particular parameters along the lines of being comparatively small and comparatively short-term, as contrasted with what he was pointing out, non-performing and longer-term. And the point being of looking for seconds that are comparatively short-term and are performing is that, in turn, you could pick those up, again, for a smaller investment overall, as was already been discussed thoroughly. But further, then, in turn, your investment, the investor's investment of funds and time is shorter term, and you're actually comparatively turning your money overall faster. And so for whatever returns you're actually getting off of that second, by virtue of the strategy of repetitive accumulation, then you're getting an overall increased, overall greater return even, because you're turning your money more frequently.
It's just an observation
for another variation about using seconds.
Right. Now, that just makes me think, if I bought a second, I mean, there's got to be some parameters around it. Like, I wouldn't want to buy a second on an upside-down home unless it's a soaring, you know, market, like in California.
Yes, well, like I say, it's just an observation about another variation analyzing and searching for lining up the data elements of a performing first and a performing second, and the second that you're focusing on is of shorter term length, hypothetically 6 months, 12 months, or whatever, you know, a shorter term length, so that then comparatively if you're investing, if you've got, you know, 50,000 or whatever is your overall amount, and a smaller size, then each and every time that you put in an amount and you turn it and get that investment cycle, if you will, completed within whatever is that overall term, and you turn and you get that money back out and you turn it again and again, repeatedly, and overall for that overall fund amount, you're going to be getting an increased return.
Okay, so there you go.
That's
all right, thanks, Gloria. And I got another question. This is the 310 area code.
Hello there. I have actually two questions. The first one might be a little quicker to answer. I'm not a loan administrator, so if I were to take possession of a first or second, how would I then process the paperwork, the contracts? I mean, I'm just set up to invest my money and have other people administer the technicalities. It sounds like I might have to be pushing envelopes here. How do you get around that?
Well, there are a number of companies out there that actually sell defaulted notes, non-performing notes. So if you don't want to, you know, go out and find them and negotiate for them and get the paperwork done and do all the due diligence that is required to make sure it's all on the up and up, there are companies out there. Gemini Capital Management with Jack Krupe, who's teaching at our event in Las Vegas next month, they have a fund where they sell to individual investors and they sit down with you and find out what your parameters are, what your risk tolerance is, and try to match you to the and where what area of the country you're interested in, questions like that, and maybe Gordon.
My question is less about the due diligence on the front end. It's about after acquiring the note, who is then administering it? Sometimes it's the bank that does it. Sometimes it's a third party that sends out the notices every month, that collects the money, that sends that annoying reminder call if they don't pay. Who does that?
Servicing note servicing company. Gordon, you want to take that? But I would say a servicing company would be, that's what they do.
What we got is at the Vegas event.
My note broker friend actually has a servicing company also. So they'll be easy to find. I think it's like an extra $25 a month or something.
Okay, so that is a quick answer. And then the other question is, are there any types of liens that can trump a first or second? Am I going to have to do any title research, or can I assume if I'm buying a second, there's nothing that can come in that will trump it and make my junior a third, so to speak?
So here's the deal. A first always trumps a second. Okay, we'll leave it at that. And then taxes trump everything. So you got to worry about the taxes ahead of you if you're in first or second position. Other liens, the government runs the world. You know, that's kind of the way it is. So their liens are priority to everything. That's a simple answer to that question.
Okay.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. If there's any other questions, *6 will get you in the Q&A queue. And yeah, I think it's now. Let me tell you a story. My very first real estate deal ended up getting a scam, and it had more to do with the trust deed investing, which is kind of the same, kind of very similar. I had bought a property, and we had, you know, broken up all of our piggy banks and paid cash for it and fixed it up, and that was back when the FHA still made you wait a long time before you could accept offers for FHA buyers. But anyway, I was being cashing out of that property so that I could go on and buy more properties. And just the lady that I was talking to ended up, using my name and ended up collecting. As it turns out, I didn't find out about this until well after the house had sold, but used my name and my application to sell trust deeds to these two elderly gentlemen of like $60,000. And I had decided that it wasn't worth the interest to follow through with her loan and just decided not to go ahead with it. But in the meantime, she kept the $60,000. How do you guys make sure that that doesn't happen, you know, when you're doing note investing, that it's not fraudulent?
Gordon, you want to do that? Take that one.
In this little niche that we're talking about now, the non-performing note niche, you're buying effectively bank paper. But let me answer a question about bank paper and the fraud there, or potential fraud.
Okay.
Really, we've not experienced it, frankly. So the banks will sell you just a few of their inventory. If there's anything weird or gray or anything like that, they won't sell it to you, and they'll make certain representations about it. So in my little space, once again, I'm not really dealing with what you're talking about, but I am dealing with buying somebody else's note, normally a bank, who has written good paper in their legalese, which is strong. So fraud on that end, haven't experienced it. So I'm really not buying a note from an individual. I'm buying it from an institution. And then, you know, we have not sold our reperformers once we get them fixed, but others do. And I guess that would be, you got to worry about that a little bit. But, you know, you can get a good attorney to review the paperwork and make sure everything is the way it should be. But that's my best answer as far as fraud or whatever you're saying, or somebody doing the wrong thing with the notes that we bought so far.
So if I wanted to sell, like I sold a property with seller financing, and if I wanted to sell that note, you know, how does the person that's buying my note, I mean, I know you're dealing with the banks and everything, but I know that there's a lot of seller financing going on these days just because it's so hard to get loans. How do they know that my note is real, it's valid, I guess maybe there's not an answer to my question, but
well,
other than
the,
maybe...
Yeah, that's a concern, obviously, but number one, the paperwork is all recorded, so it's there. There was a title company probably involved in the sale of the property where the note
that's
was
true.
Taken back. So you do your due diligence with the title company and or a lawyer. If a lawyer was involved, you contact them. And it's just a matter of, like anything else, due diligence, checking out the paperwork. And, yes, it could be fraudulent. The whole thing could be a fraudulent deal. It would be very difficult to, you know, get the complicity of a title company to claim that this is this note is valid when it's a fraud. So I've never, Gordon said he hasn't had a problem like that. I've seen a couple of attempts at that where they, but the one I'm thinking of was so obvious. You know, they wouldn't give me gave me a copy of the note wording, but they wouldn't give me a copy of where it was signed. So that's pretty obvious. Yeah. So,
okay.
And I did get, I remember on this subject, I got in the mail, someone who said, I would like to sell this note, and it was a copy of a note, and the note said, I promise to pay, you know, so-and-so the sum of whatever it was, $500,000 on or after, and they have a certain date. That was the note they were trying to sell. They would make the payment on or after.
Beautiful.
Wow.
And there was no collateral
either.
It was signature alone, yeah. So,
I didn't buy that note. Well, that's good. Well, I want to remind everybody, star 6 will get you in the Q&A queue. I've got like two of the smartest people in this business on the phone here right now. So if you've got any questions about non-performing notes or even performing notes, you can press the star 6 to get into the Q&A queue. And I hear somebody trying to star 6. Who is that? I don't know. Anyway, star 6 will get you to the Q&A queue. And in the meantime, let me tell you a little bit about this conference that they've got coming up. Again, it's at budurl.com/noteconference. It's in Las Vegas, September 27th and 28th, at sort of just a block off the strip, Tuscany Hotel, I believe, Tuscany Suites Hotel. And it's pretty reasonable rate. And not only that, if you sign up to go to that conference, which it sounds like it's going to be full of all kinds of information through that budurl.com/noteconference, you'll get Bill's 1-year newsletter for no charge, which is just phenomenal. I don't see any questions coming in.
Hey, June, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
That was me trying to answer the question. It looks like you didn't shut me down the last time I asked. I'm still on live.
Oh, no.
That's fine. I have another question. This all sounds so wonderful. I mean, right now I'm doing rehabs, you know, and expecting all in to have 70% of value. And it sounds like I can do that with notes and possibly flip the note in less time it would take me to rehab a house and flip it. Is that a fair assumption? And if it is, then where do I go to buy these magical notes to make this money?
Can I answer that one, Bill?
This is Gordon.
Yeah, please do, Gordon.
I've heard it put this way. You can rehab the property or you can rehab the people, and I prefer to do the latter. I'm not a handy person at all, and I've had, I've got a lot of property myself. I own rental property. But the note business is unique because you're really not doing that. You're really not in the rehab of the property business. You're in this business, in the note business. And it's a fascinating field. And I think anybody that really wants to have the complete tool belt in the real estate business, if they have this in their armory, they are dangerous. And few people do. And hats off to Bill Mancaro for the last decades of putting this information out and making it available to people, because it's really something that most people ignore. They look at a house and see sticks and bricks and say, okay, I can fix the bricks and clean the sticks and I can make money that way. Well, guess what? There's a lot more money behind the scenes. It's why the banks have the biggest buildings in town. They figured that out hundreds of years ago, that it's much more money, frankly, in the note business. But let me just say, as far as your question about where you get these magical notes, like anything else, the way I put it this way, it's a relationship business. And I first went out when I first heard about this, kind of like where you are now, and said, okay, how do I play? You know, how do I get to do this? And I know that people will sense right away that I'm a new guy and probably take advantage of me. So how do I deal with all that? A couple avenues out there that I don't recommend are, one, on the Internet, you'll find all these note broker types out there. And I'm not saying they're all bad guys, but I call them joker brokers. And they get in these daisy chains where they have no control of the note, and you end up frustrated and with a little smoke over your head at the end of the thing. I wouldn't recommend going to the brokerage avenue. I also wouldn't recommend going directly to the banks, which I normally started with. But there's kind of an assumption, I'm going to go buy bank paper, well, I'll just go to the banks. Tried that, and I'm not saying it's not possible, but I haven't had the success doing it. Here's what I've done. As I mentioned earlier, I went around the country and met all the people. I met the guys. There's a new entity out there, the hedge fund, and is looking for opportunities in our marketplace in the United States and the world. And basically, they go to the big banks, they buy notes from the banks in bulk, and then we'll sell off a portion a lot of times to an educated investor. And I emphasize that point because if you don't know the lingo and you don't know how to talk to these hedge funds, they're not going to waste their time with you. You need to develop a relationship with them the way they've developed a relationship with the big bank. So I mentioned that word twice now, relationship, like anything else. I mean, you got relationships with your contractors, with your brokers, with your real estate guys. It's the same thing. So once again, in Las Vegas, there'll be several of them there, the hedge funds that sell these type of things. First, second, Jack Hoopy is a note guy, a good guy who could direct you to first. There's people there that could give you seconds. You're going to need to know the game, though. You need to, you know, They won't spend their time educating you. You got to come with that. But it's about a relationship where they trust you and you trust them. They know, like, and trust you. They know that you'll do what you say and not, you know, waste their time. So that's my best answer to that question.
And that's where you'll, you know, you can get the instruction is at our event next month, last Friday and Saturday of the month in Las Vegas, where, you know, we're going to start with the basics. We're going to start, in fact, I was talking to Jack just yesterday and going over his presentation, and we're going to just start with, you know, here are the definitions. When I use this term, this is what I mean, and this is what, you know, what is a hedge fund? A lot of people already know all that stuff, but we're going to bring everybody up to speed so we're all on the same page and then proceed so that our goal is after you've been to this event, you've spent 2 days in intensive learning and networking with people from all over the country that are in it. Some are beginners, some are advanced. Our goal is that you can go to these hedge funds and talk, speak their language, know what they're saying, and they will respect you and you can do deals with them.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point. I know that a lot of these seminars, and there's, you know, just this whole business is, I don't know exactly how to say it, but can attract some unsavory sorts. So I think it's really important to do your due diligence when you're dealing with people, and you know, sometimes just a little internet search on somebody's name can be telling. So,
yeah, I always, to check somebody out, I always Google them with words like fraud, scam, ripoff, and see what I get. And federal prison, Google somebody's name who claims to be a teacher putting on a seminar, and Google them with the words federal prison and see what you get. Actually, you might be surprised at some of them. We don't allow any sales in our meeting room. I know a lot of these, you know, sideshows, you pay money to get there, you pay hotel bills, you pay, you know, your food, and you pay a registration fee, and you sit there, and they hammer you with sales pitches. Oh, you got to buy my boot camp, you got to buy my home study course. You know, today, you know, it's usually $5,000, but today only it's this, and you got to buy my mentoring for $20,000. We don't do any of that. We don't allow that in at all. It's straight education, and I just want people to feel comfortable that if they go to a paper source event, they're not going to get that garbage.
And I want to recommend to everybody also to, even though they might come there, and which I recommend that you do, and I'm looking at how I can fit it into my schedule as well, but, sometimes there's these side people that just come out of the woodwork, and, you know, just be careful, you know. I mean, just because they're at the event doesn't mean that they're okay. So, again, like I said, just check anybody out before you start buying things and sending money around. So, okay, we've got a couple more questions, and so I'll remind everybody of star 6 to get in the Q&A queue. This is the 619 area code.
Yes. Hi, my name is Ellen, and I'm calling from San Diego, California, and I do have a question for Gordon. Okay, if you are buying a second lien note, a junior lien, is one of your criteria would be the first lien should be performing, or you could also buy both, you know, if the first and the second are both non-performing? That's my first question. And then the second question would be, I know you gave us a good example a while ago of the $300,000 worth of home in Los Angeles. Now, how about, another example, if it's not the same case as what you have, you know, gave a while ago?
Okay. All right. Let me start with your first question. You asked about the criteria for buying a non-performing junior lien. And let me tell you the way I – yeah, okay. Let me tell you the way I started, because I recommend most people start that way, because you want a relatively safe starting point. Here it comes. I would look at a nice single-family house. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about non-performing notes on single-family houses, residential property. And there's a reason for that. I like an owner-occupied single-family house because it's got something that I call emotional equity. There are people that live in that house. A lot of times, a married couple that go to church down the street, that have kids that go to school down the street, that have neighbors. They have an emotional attachment to that house. They want to keep that house. I can see that. Now, when you're starting, once again, I would buy a performing first in front of it. Let me tell you a scenario of how it normally works. Let's say that this Mr. and Mrs. Smith, a couple that lives in this three-bedroom, two-bath house in San Diego, bought this house a long time ago, and in 06 or 07 or 08, with the economy being what it was, maybe one of them lost their jobs, okay? And they couldn't pay their house payment. Did they want to stay in their house? Yes. It was their house. It was their neighborhood. It was their community. But they couldn't make the payment. So they quit paying the first and the second. Now, here's what happened. The first got real nasty real quick, and they said, hey, you pay us or we're going to foreclose. And they said, well, we can't pay you. And they said, first said, I don't think you heard me. You pay us or we're going to foreclose. We're going to take your home. You're going to be out of here. And they said, we can't make the payments. And the first came back the third time and said, you know what? We were just kidding. We're not going to foreclose. We're actually going to restructure your loan. We're going to make it a 40-year loan at a 2% interest rate. So your $3,000 a month payment, it's only $1,000 a month now. Can you pay that? Yes, we can. Great. Okay. So now they have a restructured first loan, and it's performing. They're paying it now. Okay? So that's the first loan on Mr. and Mrs. Smith's house here in San Diego. Okay? Here's the second loan on that same house. They didn't pay that one either. They couldn't pay it. But here's what happened. The second lender, here's what they did. They sent them one nasty letter. They said, hey, we noticed you haven't been paying us. Not good. We're going to nick your credit. It ain't good. You better pay us. That's it. And they went away. 3 or 4 years went by that the second just didn't even contact them. They disappeared. The second lien holder, hey, let's call it Wells Fargo or Citibank or Bank of America, they sold the loan to me for 10 cents on the dollar. That $50,000 loan, I bought it for $5,000, cheap. Now, I call them up, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and I say, hey, I understand you're in your house. The first has worked out a deal with you. Your payment's now $1,000 a month. What were you paying on the junior lien on the second 3 or 4 years ago? Well, we were paying $600 a month. Oh, what happened? Well, my husband lost his job. Oh, okay, well, what's happening now? Well, he got another job, but it's not the same caliber job. He works at McDonald's now. It's only half the money, so we're a little tight right now. Okay, well, how about this? What if we charge $200 a month? Could you fit that in your budget comfortably? Yeah, we could. Okay, then your $500 note now is now $200 a month, and we're all good. Now they're in their house. They're paying their first. They're paying their second. And me as an investor, I paid $5,000 for that note. I'm getting $200 a month. Quick math on that. After 2 years, I've got my $5,000 back, and I've got another 28 years of $200 a month. And if they ever refinance or sell their home, I get paid off the full 50, plus all the interest I've made. So that's an example of why I would recommend to a newer person, which is the way I started, buying an equity loan. Let's call it something with some equity in it, not upside down, and a performing first and non-performing second on a nice single-family, three-bedroom, two-bath, Mr. and Mrs. Smith house. That's the way I would purchase my first non-performing note. Now, I've been down the road now. I've done this a lot, and I buy other kinds of things now. I buy non-performing first. I buy way underwater notes because I can pay a fraction of the money, but let's not get into that. Let's just keep it simple to answer your question. So I buy all kinds of notes right now, but as a new person, and what I'll lay out in Las Vegas, the way I would start is just what I just laid out. So does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
And did I answer your – I guess your second question was an example. I kind of gave an example, but –
You gave already an example. Yes. Yes. And can I also answer the other question of you know, the gentleman a while ago? Because, you see, if they're looking for a note to buy or sell, I would recommend this book, you know, that I have. It's called Note Buyer's Directory. It's called Directory of Owner Finance Note Buyers and Service Providers. I have that book that I'm using. Although I'm not there yet, I have not started doing this business yet. It's all education. So that's all I would like to say.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I really enjoyed that second example as well. I mean, it sounds like that doesn't happen all of the time. You know, sometimes they're going to foreclose and you get, you know, a measly $50 through, you know, a note you might have paid a lot more for. But, you know, most of the time you're really getting major high-end returns on your investment.
And Gene, you know, that's a good point, too. I don't mean to make this business sound easy. It ain't easy. It's like anything. It ain't easy. And if it was, everybody would be doing it, and that whole story, you know how that goes. But is it worth it? If you're willing to get through the education process, learn this business, does the opportunity exist right now? Absolutely. And I really don't like pie-in-the-sky people or people that make it sound easy. I gave you two good examples of notes that do work. And do they all work out that way? Nope. But do enough work out to where it's very profitable if you're in this business? Yes. And once again, I'll add a lot of examples at the event, at Bill's event in Las Vegas.
And we're not just going to do the everything that worked out so beautifully type examples. I know Jack Krupe, who's also teaching with Gordon, mentioned he's gonna show you some of the deals that didn't go as well and why didn't they go as well and what did he learn from that and what won't he do again. So I like those kinds of things too.
Yeah.
Me too. And that's why I like you guys so much, because I bring that into my field trips as well. I tell you exactly where I made the mistakes and how I made them and what I learned from them. So good. I'm glad that you're going to be addressing that. Okay, we have a couple more questions. And is this my friend, new friend Bob?
Yes, it is. Thanks, Jean. I've got a question. I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, but I understand you can buy single notes relatively easy if you find the right sources. But what's the critical amount of capital to buy pools where you get an extreme price break? And I know I'm not saying that well, but is $500,000 enough capital to buy a large enough pool where you can buy a pool at 15 cents on the original loan amount, or is that more like $2 or $3 million?
This for me? I hate to say this word, but I'm going to. It depends on what type of notes you're buying. Are you buying first liens? Are you buying second liens? What area are you buying them in? Are you buying them in Detroit and Cleveland, or are you buying them in nice areas? So there's a lot to that, but let me continue this. There are people out there, hedge funds, that will sell you a single note. Will you pay more for it? Yes. Probably a lot more, okay? But as far as your amount of money that you're talking about there, you could buy what they call a mini pool of non-performing junior liens for about 50 grand. They'd like 100, but 50 would be enough. Just to get started, you'd probably buy 7 or 8 loans, and that would be a mini pool. Would you pay, say if they paid 7 cents on the dollar, you're going to pay 15 cents. And, you know, there's all so much criteria about it, once again, which I'll go over in detail. But, mm-hmm. You know, when I first started, I said, well, I'd like them all in San Diego, where I live. And they said, no, you don't get it. You know, we got to buy from the banks. They buy nationally. You got to buy nationally. I said, well, how about Southern California? They said, I guess you're as dumb as you look.
God bless you, right.
You've got to buy them there. I said, well, how about just this side? How about just trustee states? How about this? How about that? So, and once again, I built a relationship with them, but to your question about the money, you know, that kind of money, you know, the Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citibank, all the major top banks out there, they really don't want to deal with, you know, what you've normally got there is an executive whose job is to dispose of these assets every month, and he's got to sell, you know, 10,000 assets a month or he loses his job. And if he knows, likes, and trusts you and knows that you've got $10 million, and knows that you'll close the deal when you say you will, even if it ain't perfect, to save his job to get next month's deal, you're his guy. And that's the kind of relationships at that level, at the hedge funds level that we're talking about. Now, the hedge funds, once again, here's the second tier. Now, you're the second tier. You're the private investor with 100 grand or $1 million, whatever you got. Now, you got to have that same relationship with the hedge funds and say, they know, like, and trust you. They know you close the deal. You don't flake at the last minute. They don't have time for that. They got plenty of buyers. So it's a relationship you build. 50 grand will get you a mini pool. Can you buy one note? Yes. I don't know if that answers the question or not.
Yeah, you gave me a feel for it. I'm primarily interested this time in non-performing first positions, but you did just on this call alone open my eyes to second. So I think I'll start trying to learn about seconds. And I think you kind of encouraged me that if you're willing to buy nationwide and not state-specific, that $500,000 to $1 million could buy a mini pool of first positions.
Absolutely. And Jack is Jack Krupe is going to be there at Gemini. He's a pro at that. He's been doing this forever.
Very good. Can I ask you another quick question?
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, it's more of a comment. Were you guys at the New York conference a month ago that was put on by National Mortgage News?
I've been to their distressed debt conference. I think I saw Bill there, two or three years ago. I missed the last one. I was in Alaska with my family. I did not make it, but I've been to the several ones before that.
Yeah, it was an excellent conference, except that it was way over my head. So I think your conference is more of would be more valuable to me than the National Mortgage News conference.
Let me just
thank you
on that. Yeah, I don't have any. They're a great conference. They have a nice magazine periodical. But our thing is going to be specifically about education in this niche. Their thing mainly is they've got some really high powered players from the FDIC, from these major banks, et cetera. But they talk high level banking trends, regulations, government stuff. And frankly, what I get out of those conferences in New York mainly is the networking myself and
right.
a flavor for what's happening in the market. Our deal specifically is going to be about for the small investor learning this business.
Sounds perfect.
Okay. I'm at your site. Thanks for your information, guys.
Thank you.
I want to also mention that Bob is a hard money lender, and I'm not giving out his last name. Only if you come to the Florida Miami event. It's GeneNorton.com/Miami, and he is my special guest as a hard money lender. So if you want to know his last name, come to Miami.
Thank you, Gene.
Bob. You're welcome. I've got another question. Okay, this is a 361 area code.
Hi, yes, this is Steven. I'm from Corpus Christi.
Oh, hi.
Yes, please excuse me if I misinterpret your success story, but essentially what I think is that you accept an offer, banker or whoever the lender is, and then you approach the borrower.
Yes.
Hello? Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
So wouldn't it be a risk if, say, you cannot contact a borrower or you don't know who the borrower is and you know if you can even structure a deal with a borrower? Would it be easier to contact the borrower first, then you accept an offer with a bank or the lender?
That would be a wonderful way to do it, but you should never do that. There are privacy laws. They don't know their loan is for sale. They might create all sorts of problems for you. Nobody in the business, and no matter who you ask, they're going to tell you should never contact the borrower beforehand until you own the note.
They will make you sign a non-disclosure agreement when you're buying these notes, saying that you understand exactly what Bill said, that there are laws that you cannot contact this borrower until you own the note. So what you do is you put your Sherlock Holmes hat on ahead of time and do the research knowing that you can't contact the borrower ahead of time. I agree that the best way to do it would be to say, okay, here's some loans for sale. I'll just call the borrower and say, hey, are you still in the house? Do you plan to make payments? Are you employed? Are you in jail? So you'd know about them. But you can't do that. So you have to do your best and say, okay, let's pull their credit report and see how they make their other payments, on their car, on everything else. Do they not make their child support payments? Do they have character issues? You can tell a lot about them by their credit report. You have to do that ahead of time. And once again, in the Vegas event, I'm going to go through my step process, which I call the wake-up and the workout. Frankly, the wake-up is the hardest point. Sometimes, as you said, you can't contact them. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to be found. And who are you? They had a loan with Wells Fargo. You're just some private investor guy who bought their note. They don't want to talk to you. So how are you going to deal with that? And I go through a whole process of how you do it. But I hope that answers that question.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Gordon mentioned another couple of ways, and you can find out if they're paying their property taxes. You can find if you know the location of the house, obviously where the lien is on. You can check is the electric turned on. Some of the basics like that, but you should never go to the borrower before you buy the note.
I see. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was an excellent question. That's kind of where the risk comes in. And, you know, I tell people that everybody that's involved in real estate is an entrepreneur. And even though they don't think of it, they just think that they're in real estate. But the reality is that entrepreneurs, it doesn't matter whether you're in real estate, whether you own a shop, whether you do consulting, you know, whatever it is, there's a certain level of traits and qualities and issues, and a lot of it is risk-taking. And if you're risk-averse, you know, this is not the right place. But, you know, it's just like Gordon said, sometimes you win some, sometimes you lose some, and you can't concentrate on what what doesn't work out. I mean, with his position and his strategy, not all of them work out, and he knows that. And he's probably got a quota of what he expects and have worked out and not work out. And it's a matter of getting a feel for the game and understanding it and, you know, having the wherewithal to, you know, not beat yourself up if things don't work out right, et cetera. And that's the way it is in the real estate business. So,
and, Gene, that's a great point. That's a fantastic point. You know, we call it risk management. We're all going to have to take risks to get anywhere ahead in life. It's the way it is. So you manage your risks. You assume when you go up to bat at the baseball game, the best hitter on the field hits 400. That means he misses six times, every time. And he's the best in the world. He makes $1 billion. So manage the risk. You know, have I lost deals? Absolutely. And as Bill said, I'm going to go into them in detail. I'm going to tell you my worst deals, which is probably the most valuable thing I can tell you. So it's risk management, and that's the way successful people get ahead, in my opinion.
And learn from it. You're right. In fact, I just closed on a problem property, and I think I walked away with about a 6% profit, you know, on it. It was just one of those times that one of my networking guys, he said, well, you know, if you've never had one of those deals where you walk away and said, man, I'm glad I got my money back out of that one, then you haven't been doing real estate long enough. And that's true. Not everyone's a winner, and you need to know that going into any real estate deal that you go into. But it sounds like your high is pretty darn high.
Well, you know, Gene, there's an old saying, and it's one of my favorite sayings, and you probably know it. Good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment.
Yeah. I think that's one of the most important things. When people come to my field trips, I just see them being unsure and being afraid to move forward. And I think a lot of what I do in the field trips is kind of help them prioritize and where can you make a mistake, where do you see it going wrong, and then, you know, having the confidence to move forward, knowing that, yeah, it may not work, but, you know, you're going to be around people who are doing what you're doing too, and there's resources, and I think everybody that comes to your event, you know, will probably trade cards and, you know, see what's going on and share their learnings, and I hope that's possible, you know, because that's what I did when I started out. I just started blogging about my experiences and my learnings, and I think people found it extremely valuable. And when you go into something new, like, you know, the notes, non-performing notes, I mean, I just see this as a tremendous potential. Again, their conference is budurl.com/noteconference. And we do have another question. And it's the 718 area code.
Yes, hello everyone. Just had a question. You talk about risk management. I was wondering if the payer had claimed bankruptcy, are these deals dead on arrival or what?
Can I answer that question?
Please do.
Yeah.
I think that's a great question.
Well, it is a very good question, and I have it a lot. And I'll tell you what, I have a list on my wall here of the 7 questions I get asked most frequently and the 9 questions you should be asking me. So, frankly, that's one of the 7 that I get asked all the time. And let me put it this way, and I'm going to cover that in Las Vegas, all of my questions that I get all the time. So bankruptcy is one of those boogeymen out there that everybody fears, but the more you know about it, the less fear you get. And here's how it comes. There's 2 flavors of bankruptcy. There's 7 and 13 in the consumer world. And a lot of people drive down the freeway and see that big sign there. It says, bankruptcy attorney, you know, 800 this, call this number, solve all your problems. Frankly, it doesn't solve your problems. And I've had borrowers file bankruptcy, and I said, oh, boy, here it comes. You know, here's that the worst deal I ever had. Here it comes. Frankly, they've been the best deals I've ever had. And let me just kind of run it by you. If you were to file bankruptcy, say a Chapter 13, which is a three to five-year restructure, you would effectively have to go to a judge and write up a plan, a detailed plan, and you have to give them everything. I mean, your shoe size, every asset you've ever had, got, or anything like that. And it's online. There's a site called PACER, P-A-C-E-R, P-A-C-E-R.com, Public Access Court Electronic Records, which everything is logged on right there. Once you file the bankruptcy, I know all about you. I know everything about you. And the fact is, you weren't paying me, and you don't plan to pay me. Now the court, if you're a secured lien holder, a first or a second, will appoint a trustee who's in charge of getting your money and giving it to me through your bankruptcy plan. Because you've got to show the court that you can actually come out of this. And that's your plan. That's your plan that you gave to the judge. So this trustee can do things that I can't even do. He can go to your work and garnish your wages directly. He pays me. You never planned to pay me. The court-appointed trustee will. So I'll go into bankruptcy also once again at the conference, and we'll talk about this for days, but I actually like bankruptcy now because everybody kind of says what you just said. They kind of say, well, oh, what about bankruptcy? And the banks feel that way too. So I'll go to the bank and say, hey, you know, do you have any bankrupt notes? And they're like, oh, you know, that's the bad pile. I said, oh, yeah, real bad. And they'll say, well, you know, we have some, yeah. I said, well, I'll buy those. I won't pay much, but I'll buy them because they're such terrible things. And I'll buy them so I can make a lot more profit, frankly, on a bankrupt note because I know the game than I can on a regular note. I love bankruptcy. So that's a quick answer to that one.
Well, that was a good question, and I'm glad the gentleman asked it. And that kind of reminded me too that if you have a certain situation, you've got some situation with your own personal finances, or you're looking at a particular non-performing note, that Gordon, who's the nation's number one expert in non-performing junior liens, and Jack Krupe, who's our number one expert in first non-performing liens, and they're both teaching. They are the teachers, just two teachers at this two-day conference, so you're going to get intensive stuff. They will be available for private consultations with you, and no extra charge for that, and go over your portfolio, go over your situation, answer your questions that relate to you personally. So I'd like to encourage people to take advantage of that as well.
That's awesome. I like the idea of the bankruptcy notes, frankly. I mean, you still have a lien on the property. So
yep.
even though the debt has been discharged, you have a lien on the property, so there's got to be a way to collect. Anyway, okay, obviously that's something that's new to me, too, so I'm going to have to wrap my brain around it. And but it was an excellent question, and I'm really looking forward to to talking to you guys more and learning more about what you guys do. And, again, that's budurl.com/noteconference. And if you can't find it or having a problem with the link, just email me, jean@jeannorton.com. I'm usually on Facebook also, and you can reach out to me there. If you've got any questions at all, just reach out to me.
I think we should mention, too, if people want to call, we have an 800 number, and if they mention your name when they sign up for our non-performing notes training next month, they'll get a free subscription to the Paper Source Journal, which includes the Registry of Note Investors and Servicers, which are the major note investment companies around the country. And they can, if they want to do that and mention your name, we will give them that at 800-542-2270.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for giving that phone number and also reminding them about mentioning my name to get that free bonus. That is so awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. I really want to, again, I've got a busy, crazy schedule in September, but I really want to come. Want to remind you, the Seattle field trip is coming up really soon, and one of my buddies has made the statement that if dirt is not in your list of strategies, you are missing the boat. And I think the more strategies you have and knowing what you can do when you're looking at a piece of property, whether it's on a note or if you're looking at a note that's got a scraper on it, you need to know about what you're going to do with that piece of dirt. And we're going to be bringing in some dirt. I'm going to have a dirt guy on my next call. His name is John Banowski, and he is a dirt expert. And I had no idea how dangerous dirt can be, so I think it would be a really great call. GeneNorton.com/Seattle. We still have openings. We've got a great hotel downtown, reasonably priced, and that is going to be September 6th through 8th. And we're having remotely with a little bit of dirt. And I've got Mark Pantak is my host there. And I'm going to look for Mark here and unmute him, see if he's got something that he wants to announce. Mark is a Mark, if you're there, just do a star six. I'll get you in here because there's too many people on this call. There he is. Okay. Mark Pantak is, I muted him and then unmuted him. He is a master networker, big-time traveler, well-known throughout the nation as a wheeler-dealer with real estate investing. And he and I teased each other at one time about we having remotely. You know, next thing I hear is him tell me he closes a deal in Beaumont, Texas. Next thing I know, he's in Kansas City. So he was like, you know, I'm like, well, where are you? I thought you were in Houston. He said, this is like the pot calling the kettle black. And so since then, Mark and I have talked many times, and I find him extremely knowledgeable and about a lot of different areas, Seattle. Mark, I'm really looking forward to it. What's going on in Seattle? How should I dress?
Well, I'm in Dallas today, and fortunately the weather is nice because we had a cool friend. I've been here for training in apartments, but I want to put a plug for Bill on PaperSource because he is the number one that I recommend to people interested about notes. His website, everything he does, and these conferences, I've been to them before over the years. They're excellent. Highly recommend them. So I buy performing and not-performing notes. Bill's very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that, Mark.
Yeah. And in any case, regarding Seattle, it's going to be very good. It looks like the weather, with any luck, is going to hold. We're going to have clear, beautiful weather instead of rain. But you never know with Seattle, with the Puget Sound and the clouds and everything. But I have been working with wholesalers and working on some marketing. So my plan is, and realtors as well, to have several different properties that we can look at, and maybe even some that are under contract that they might be able to buy. And if that doesn't work out at the event itself, I will have some for follow-up that people are interested in. I've got a pretty good contractor. I've got a whole network of inspectors, all kinds of different people for the event lined up, and I'm still tweaking that. I'm going to be flying next week already? Yeah, the week after I'll be in Seattle. So I'll be there doing additional preparations for a whole week. So I'm really looking forward to it. And looking forward to anybody else that wants to come. I personally will work with anybody to help you, whether you want to buy a wholesale deal or you want a turnkey deal, hands off, whatever you want. If you want to do a deal in Seattle, there's some excellent opportunities there. When you come, you're going to be blown away. You'll be excited because I love fresh salmon. I love mountains. I love water. And I'm telling you, a lot of people love Seattle. A lot of people are moving to Seattle, and there's some good high-paying jobs. So Seattle, the property values went up over $500,000 before for the median. They came back down. There were houses in short sales that were $400,000. They're selling for $200,000, and the market's come back, but there's still a window of opportunity in Seattle. So I'm very excited about what we can do there.
That's awesome. And if anybody has been to one of my events or thought about it or talked to anybody that's been to one of my events, there is absolutely no reason that you can't leave there without a deal in your hand. I know of several people that have negotiated deals. I know we just finished up with Chicago, and I know at least three people that are doing deals as a result of that. And so I really encourage everybody to get in there soon. I've just got a limited number of hotel rooms available at that downtown hotel, so go ahead and register at GeneNorton.com/Seattle. And I want to thank everybody again. Hold on just a minute. We've got another question. 360 area code.
Yeah, this is Chuck. I got a question either for Gene or Mark. On the Seattle seminar, what are going to be the hours for each day of the seminar?
We start at 9 and certainly end by 6. Now, the last day will probably end early. The last day is usually you know, kind of a loose ending when people are actually starting to make deals and make offers. And, you know, if you want to get out of there, you can get out of there. If you want to, you know, stay, you can stay. Some people even stay over on Monday and work with either realtors or wholesalers just on their own. So it's but pretty much it's, you know, start 9 and leave by 5 or 6.
Okay. And what is the cost for the seminar?
It is it's $19.97, and
okay.
That's for all 3 days.
Okay, and what if you have a spouse? What is there like a discounted rate for that, or 2-for-1, or what's the deal?
It's not 2-for-1, but I would certainly love for your spouse to come, and let me set up a special code where she would be 50% off. Is that okay?
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'll do that because other people have asked about that, so yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, that concludes my questions.
Okay, well, and then I've got another question. 734 area code.
Hi, Jean, Ron Field.
Hi, Ron, how are you?
Good. Another great call that you always put on every week. Really appreciate them. I got in a little bit late and been away from the phone off and on. Did Bill give a website that we can look at or get on?
Yeah, budurl.com/noteconference.
Note conference?
Yes, all one word, note conference. budurl.com/noteconference. And I've also posted it on my Facebook group.
Okay, awesome. Great.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing you guys again. As always, you know, I try to make all your events because they're always awesome. You know, bring so much to the events for everybody to work with. It's just amazing. So I look forward to seeing everybody again.
Well, thanks, Ron. If you don't mind, can I ask you how many deals have you done since the first event you went to with Ron?
Well, I'm working on number 4 right now. So it's been a big turnaround from where I first started at. With somebody else, it didn't work.
Well, that's great. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Ron. I hope you can make it to Seattle and Miami and the Note Conference and have all of that stuff.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay. And okay. I think I ended up unmuting. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in. One other thing that the gentleman was asking about starting and ending, if anybody is interested and available to come in either a day early or stay a day after, I'm happy to go and be available to work with people going around the Seattle area, as well as there's fantastic wineries for wine tasting, there's hot springs, there's salmon fishing, there's a quality of life in the Seattle area, that's fantastic. So let Gene know if you're available, come in a day early or stay a day extra. I will definitely be there, and I'd love to spend some additional time in addition to the 3 days with anybody, if anybody can come in early or stay a day over. I know it's tough sometimes with our busy schedules, but the life of a real estate investor, you got to have balance and have fun.
That's true. In fact, when I do my field trips, I usually try to take a day off for myself, and I didn't realize Seattle had so much fun stuff because I just went ahead and booked my days off in Northern California, and I'm going to do wine country there and the mud baths and all of that stuff. So I recommend you spend a few extra days and play with Mark because it sounds like there's a lot of really cool stuff to do, a lot of stuff to learn. So I want to thank Gordon and Bill for being on the call today. Thank you so much for taking such time out of your busy schedules, and I really appreciate everything you've shared. It's just significant learnings, and I know you've sparked a few thoughts in my brain that I'm going to have to let sit in jail for a little bit, but I'm excited about what you guys are doing, and I want to thank everybody again. This very informational call. It will be, the recording will be posted at rehabbingremotely.com. Just give me a day or so to post it. And thanks a lot again. And everybody have a great week, and to everybody's success. And I hope to meet you guys. If I don't know you already, I hope to meet you soon. You guys take care and have a great weekend.